If you're struggling with perfectionism and it's affecting your writing, you need to stay tuned for this episode. Welcome to the Christian Indie Writers Podcast, where we inform, encourage, and support Christian indie authors on their journey toward publication. My name is Jennifer Carl Tong, and I write historical Christian romance.
My name is Christina Catane, and I'm currently writing a murder mystery.
Woohoo. Thank you all of you that are listening to this podcast as a recorded podcast. We appreciate you so much. We would love it if you would subscribe and share with all of your friends. We also really appreciate those of you that show up here in YouTube on Fridays and on Facebook as well, and chat with us live, including Purpose Behind the Pen. Good morning to you, dear. We're so glad to have you here this morning. Teresa is here. Good morning, Teresa, giving us a wave. We'd like to start every... Oh, Catherine is here as well. Good morning, Catherine. We like to start every episode with our what's up. It is a time for us to share what's just going on in our lives, personal and sometimes a little bit of professional peppered in there. But Tina, what's going on with you this week?
Well, I had a really good week productively.
Good.
Using all of, like, well, not all. Using some of the tips that we gave everybody last week in our 10 tips for writing productivity. And so I've made myself a goal of 1500 words a day, and I've exceeded that, every day.
That's even awesome.
Even though I had like the greatest day yesterday going down a huge rabbit trail, I still wrote 1700 words.
That's awesome.
So I took 8,000 words that I had written over the course of several months of doing sprints on this show. Mm-hmm. And put them in a folder in my Scrivener called Deleted Scenes, mm-hmm. and started over.
Oh,
because
wow.
After the conversation that we had about my ability to describe the setting in Alaska, because I had immersed myself in there, mm-hmm. I decided to change the setting back to Alaska instead of trying to write it in Oregon, which I have never been to.
Oh.
So... Okay. I've been on the West. Well, I drove through Oregon when I was 15, when we drove from Seattle to San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Not the same thing. So it changed the story a bit, mm-hmm. just a little bit. And I decided not to kill the kids. So some of you will be happy about that. I thought it would be a much better, there's much more tension, much better. What is the word I'm looking for? Tragedy, conflict. Uh-huh. That's the word I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. If the kids were missing.
Right, because there's still something you're searching after, right? If everybody's right. Dead, then yeah, what do we have to...
So, mom is murdered and dad and kids are missing.
Okay.
So, that's like the first like little bit. So, I decided to go... I knew there's this trailer park. I had a good friend that lived in this trailer park growing up. And I used to go over there and visit him. And I was like, I'm going to have my characters live in this trailer park. So I got on Google Maps and I got on Street View and I just like went for a stroll through the entire trailer park.
That's awesome.
I was trying to find my friend's trailer, but I couldn't, like where he lived with his parents, but I couldn't find it. And then I went to my neighborhood where I grew up.
Uh-huh.
And I like just went through the whole neighborhood. I like looked at the school playground. Like I just had so much fun. And then I went out to the neighborhood near the inlet, near the shore, mm-hmm. Where I want my detective to live. And I just like went through the, like drove through the neighborhood with Google and just looked at all the houses and picked the house I want him to live in.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I went on a tour of Anchorage. It took me several hours on Thursday, but I still managed to write 1700 words. I'm not sure how that happened.
Yeah, that's incredible. You know, and you're actually taking some advice that we had given a while ago, and I don't have the episode number. When I find it, I'll put it in the show notes. But we talked about research, and one of the ways it was using Google Maps. Mm-hmm. And I've done the same thing, because even though I live in Michigan, and I've been to the UP several times, the Upper Peninsula, for those of you not around here, Michigan is in two parts. There's a lower peninsula and upper peninsula. It still was like, I wanted to be more specific about like
right.
the locations of things. And so and then also Lansing, I did not grow up in Lansing. I grew up near Lansing. And so I was able to take and find old maps as well as look at Google Maps and compare them. And because yeah. one thing you don't change, like even though roads will change and whatnot, the river going, you know, the Grand River is basically going to be the same. So
yeah. One thing that was just a big shocker to me is our high school parking lot had this fence, the student parking lot, and it had a big white sign on the fence that said military personnel only.
Mm.
And we used to go like slip through the fence and go hang out. And there was just woods. It was just woods forever. And uh-huh. Sometimes we would skip class, you know.
What? I wasn't Not you, Tina.
Yeah, we used to go out there and just, it was just woods. And I remember one time seeing some soldiers on Jeeps, like they were having some kind of field problem. We were like running, like they were going to shoot us, right? But now it's all built up. There's like barracks and military housing in those. Like there's only a small strip of trees between the high school parking lot fence and this neighborhood. And then across the street from the high school that used to be just the wooded lots, there's the Costco and there's like one of those shopping villages, you know, kind of like over there where we ride at Panera in Grand Blanc, where there's like it's almost like a whole village of shopping.
Gotcha.
They got one of those across the street from my high school. It used to be all woods.
Yeah, that's
just
cool.
Crazy.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. I also love that you looked at like what your strengths are as a writer, and then you leaned into them, you know, and I'm going to take this as an opportunity to kind of flow into my what's up. So I've spent some time this week reading, and I read a lot anyway, but like to purposely sit down and say, all right, I'm going to read something in my genre. And I chose a contemporary novel because my head's kind of been there a lot with our sprints. And so I found it wasn't a Christian one, but it was a clean romance because I don't read. I don't dabble in the other stuff. As a kid, I did. As a teenager, I read some. I had this conversation with someone recently. As a teenager, I did. I like found books and I was just like drawn in. And anyway, I don't want to read something that if my kids saw me reading it, I'd be embarrassed. Right. Mm-hmm. So anywho, here's the part that's important to us as writers is a good third of the way in the book. I literally thought to myself, did AI write this? Like there were so many things about it, subtle, but things that were like, it just felt disgenuine to the point that I wanted to go into like the reviews and ask that question. Cause I don't know where else to ask it. Mm-hmm. And because if it is being written by AI, I think that the world needs to know that. You need to say AI helped me write this or straight up wrote it. But as another author, I don't ever want to slam a writer, writer, because I know how hard it is. Mm-hmm. And there are writers that are way better than me that could come in and slam my writing. So why would I go in and slam somebody's writing this? So it was a paradox for me. I was like, I don't know. I feel like I have this obligation to, I don't know, like innocent readers that don't understand writing to like say, I think this is written by AI. But then it's, what if it wasn't? What if it was just really sloppy editing? And I don't mean edit, because here's the thing. The editing wasn't grammatical problems. There were zero grammatical or sentence structure problems. The problems were like, I don't think this person has ever been in a canoe in my life, in their life. And they're writing about being in a canoe. And I'm like, you don't put the main person in the front of the canoe. That's like canoe 101. Mm-hmm. Like you want the person who's steering, the person knows what they're doing in the back of the canoe. And like, you're not going to be able to control the canoe from the front. You know?
And like in a rowboat, the oars are in the middle and then someone sits in front and back. Like you got to know that stuff.
Yes. And then like the most ridiculous part was that like there was no oars. But they had to get downriver. So they emptied one backpack and used the other backpack as a paddle. How is that happening? But so there was that. There was a couple other things that just felt like. And then also, as I'm reading the book, in the opening part of the book, I'm like, wait, have I read this book? there were specific lines and things that were said that I know I've read before, but I had not read this book. So I kept reading the book thinking, well, have I? And I had not read this book. So that was the other thing that was a red flag to me. Like, did it literally lift something from other books that I've read?
Is that plagiarism?
I mean, that's one of the problems with AI. I mean, we could have a whole conversation and we're not experts, so I don't think we want to go there.
Right.
So this is just our conversation part of our podcast, so no one come at me. I don't understand a lot of AI. And I use AI. I'm not going to lie. I use like spell check and I use different things in AI. Like no one can say that they don't use AI at all in their writing. If you use spell check and other things, Grammarly, that's AI. Mm-hmm. Like, it's where's the line, right? There's been so many conversations in writer circles about this that I'm almost like puking that the fact that I'm actually bringing it up. But when it actually was I felt like a book that I was reading, either the person like started with some ChatGPT and then they rewrote it, but they kept some of the stuff, or they straight up, it's not even a real person. And it's just some sort of, because that's the thing too, is that a lot of the problems we've had with we as writers, not just me personally, but we as writers have struggled with Amazon, and Amazon's trying to crack down on it, is like book like loading. Like there will be fake writers, they're not even real writers. It's like people are corporations somewhere in a foreign country, and they will take and just put a bunch of like, they'll take a bunch of books, copy them and paste them into one book. And then they hire people that we've seen videos where they go through and read the book where they're not really reading it. It's just so they can earn page reads. Right. Hmm. So I don't know if this is a new form of scamming the system or if this person is just a bad writer. But like, if I hadn't started off with like, I know I read that line, like I know that I read that line. There was two separate lines, which made me go, did I read this book? And then as I continued, I knew I had it. And then there were other red flags. Yeah, Catherine saying, yikes, red flags galore. Yeah, mm-hmm. So I don't know how we as...
Did you try Googling that line to see if it popped up anywhere?
I did not. That's a good
question.
That
would be interesting.
Then what do I do if I do? What if I find out that at least those two lines were taken from somewhere? Like,
I don't know.
Do I go to...
Can really do anything. Say like something in the reviews is the only thing, but like as an author, I just won't give anyone reviews because I don't want to be dishonest.
Agreed.
And let's say that so my cousin wrote a book.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote a book of poetry called The Ghosts That Haunt Us. It's about her journey of healing from the trauma of her mother committing suicide when she was like 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful book full of beautiful poetry, but I'm not going to go leave her a review for the simple reason that if I leave her a review mm-hmm. and my other cousin writes a book, and what if it stinks?
Right. So agreed. Yeah. Right. Then what do you do? But not only that, but Amazon doesn't like authors leaving reviews for each other. So for starting off, it's one thing, but because you guys all gave me reviews when I started, we all gave you reviews, like legitimate reviews. If I didn't think your book was good, I wouldn't have let you publish it. Right. Like I wouldn't have let you get that far. But if you go back and try to find reviews from Tina or Jamie or Rhonda is still there, but Jamie or Tina, you're probably not going to find it because they will pull them eventually. They have bots going all the time looking for reviews. So that's one thing.
And I think they would have a hard time connecting my personal Amazon to my author Amazon. I don't even use
surprised.
The same name.
You'd be surprised. They use Facebook and like there's a whole algorithm that they use.
And my Facebook is not connected to my author Amazon at all.
Hmm. But you and I are connected on Facebook and my author page is connected to me personally, like, cause it's not real people doing the investigation. It's bots. So,
right.
So that's one level, the one level of like, I don't want to like do that. But the other level is I know how hard it is. Do you know what I mean? Like, so, Catherine says, unfortunately, there are some pretty bad human written books on Kindle. Right. So what if this person poured her heart and soul in this book, but she just didn't. Maybe it just didn't sit with
me
right.
Maybe she read whatever book that was that those lines were in.
And it just stuck with her.
Didn't realize that it came out in her writing.
I mean, it's possible. I'd like to give the benefit of the doubt, right? If this is a real person, I don't know that it's a real person.
I don't even know how you would be able to tell.
I don't know. And Purpose Behind the Pen says, Amazon crackdown on big phishing scam back in 2019, and a lot of authors had their books taken down. Yes. So that's the other flip side. Like, here's what I'm saying is that, like, right now, I feel pretty confident that it either is not a real author that straight up used AI, or it's an author that used maybe too much AI. But if I'm wrong and I give a review like that, I could be hurting an author that put a lot of work in it. Where, like, these authors, a lot of legitimate authors got hurt in that, mm-hmm. That problem in 2019. So anyway, I guess this is the only place I'm going to talk about it. Like, I'm not going to go back to the reviews. I'm not going to read any more books by this person. I went looking, and she's put a ton of books. I say she, could be a he, because initials, another thing that, like, I discourage myself personally to people, as like, try to be as real of a person as you can, as an author, but it's initials. So I don't know anything about this person, and they've put a ton of books out in the last year. Not so much that isn't humanly possible. So, but again, I think the biggest red flag for me was that there were zero grammatical mistakes. It was very clean in that way, but it was like the human details, like the parts that like make that as a human we put into a story. I should have taken notes as one, because there was a lot more than what I'm mentioning, but anyway. So that's my what's up, is that, like, I think that I'm not anti AI. I do think you could probably even use ChatGPT in a very moral way. Like, if you're struck on a chapter, like, you're just like, and you just go to ChatGPT and say, write me a paragraph of a person drowning. And they write you a paragraph, and you look at it, you're like, I like this, I don't like that. And it gives you a little bit more help, or maybe, I think you could do that. But you have to be very careful.
It's like that exercise that we all did in elementary school. Put it in your own words.
Like, right. Well,
have ChatGPT write the paragraph, and then use that as inspiration.
Inspiration. That's better than you put it in your own words. Because I used to, like, I put my own words. The cat ran by me, jogged the feline. Like, I would just take the feline jogged. I would, like, literally make it that like easy. Oh. And well, yeah, well,
I would
on.
Go a little wild when
like me, depend on my mood, I guess.
I was like, I would run out of space.
But I also went to a school that, like, I think I learned how to game it. Honestly, I was straight A student, and like, I know that I wrote history papers and things like that where I literally took the information. I would cite it, but all I did was reword it, and that's not. So I don't want you guys doing that. Don't reword it.
I probably hurt myself by doing that, because they took me out of English class, mm-hmm. and put me in this gifted class during mm-hmm. English period. And it was horrible.
Aww.
It was like all these puzzles, like these four people on this grid, and there's four people on this grid, and these two people are related this way. Now, how is everybody related? Hated that class.
Ew. Sorry. Give me back to my writing.
Yeah, why take me out of my favorite class and go make me do puzzles? Like, to this day, I hate puzzles. Like, no, I just don't want to do it.
Yeah. Oh, golly.
It's terrible.
So, anyway. But on a good note, let's bring this full circle. You know, you using Google Maps and looking at things as a way of research. But if you had to write about an area that you did not grow up in, I think you could go to ChatGPT, and I could personally say, write a paragraph describing a range in, you know, in Texas, in the Old West or something like that, and see what ChatGPT comes up. And then it might give me some terms or some locations that I can go back and do some more research. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes you just don't know where to start. And I think that there are some ethical ways to use AI. I 100% encourage using AI to do some editing for you, your first round, second round of editing. And I didn't even know you could use ChatGPT for that, but I guess you can. I've not played around with enough. I 100%. So don't think that I am anti AI, but you can't, but I do think that's another way for scammers to be hurting writers and readers, you know, for the real art. So anyway, that's it. That's my what's up. So, okay, let's move into the real topic. I feel like we've had like a mini topic here that we're just babbling on, to be honest. We are not experts in this situation, so don't come judging us here. This is just our what's up. So
yeah.
Now we're going to move on to another subject that we're not experts in either. So welcome to the welcome to our show.
Well, I don't know about you, but I am perfect.
Yes.
No.
And I've been near you.
I am perfectly imperfect.
Yeah. So you've probably heard Tina say many times, perfection is the enemy of done. And with a little bit of research, I found that the original saying actually came from Winston Churchill. Mm-hmm. And the quote is, perfection is the enemy of progress, which I love both of them. I do think that perfection is the enemy of done, but I think it can also be the enemy of progress, of just moving forward in your project. And so we've seen that truth play out in many writers' lives, and we know ourselves personally, because, right, honestly, it doesn't have to be perfect. Sometimes it just needs to be finished. Sometimes you just need to walk away and say, this draft is done. Sometimes you just have to walk away and say, this book is finished. Do you know where my issue is right now? And I guess I'll share it right now. I cannot finish writing the back stuff, the back matter of my book, because it's the last book of the series. I got to talk about my mother in this part. And I should write a paragraph about my mom. No, but I think that it's like there's a part of me that is just struggling with putting a period dot at the end. We're done with anything having to do with talking about my mom. Now, I can go back and edit this later, even after I publish. I know this, but I want it to be a perfect like explanation, because at the back of my books, I can grab one right here. So the back of my books, I always have a part that's a note from Jen, and as well as acknowledgments. That's the other thing I'm putting off too. So the note from Jen is usually talks about the book, like the inspiration of the book, the location of things, just kind of like the little bits of information that would be extra. And, because my mom was so, this book is so, book four is so much kind of like influenced by my mom's story of growing up in the church. I just am like, I feel like I'm frozen in it because I want it to be perfect. I didn't even think about the fact that I want it to be perfect until we started planning this episode. So this episode is just for me, as much for me as it for anyone else out there that's listening to this. So start looking at your own work, because it doesn't have to be perfect. It has to be finished. Are you keeping yourself from finishing because you're striving for perfection? Also, we're going to talk about how do you release yourself from the perfection chasing, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. What are some things, Tina, what would you say is one of the main things or one of the things that we should be thinking about when we're trying to release ourselves from the perfection chasing?
Well, it's impossible for one thing. And also, how do I say this? It really, if you're trying to be perfect, it's going to freeze you, especially like me. I did not write in my book three for almost a year because I felt like it wasn't perfect and I couldn't move forward. And finally, somebody had to just look me in the eye and say, What's your goal? To get the book done, then just get it done, even if it's not perfect. And why did it take so long for me to hear that? And so I think one of the things is we need each other.
Yeah.
We need each other to look each other in the eye and go, you can't be perfect. Just get it done.
Yeah, those are good words. I agree with that. Purpose Behind the Pen says, yes, this is one of my problems. I want my book to be perfect to a T, which I think is great to hear. I was complaining about a book that probably needed some more work because of some of the mistakes in it. But at the same time, it's like we can't go the opposite extreme either, right? Mm-hmm. All right. So one of the things that we discussed in our planning session was that you don't need to write the same way every time. What do we mean by that, Tina?
Well, you know, and I've been guilty of this. If I can't get in my office and my office isn't inviting and everything's not perfect, mm-hmm. then I don't write.
Yeah.
So I need to get out of the mindset that I have to be in my office between 8 and 12 a.m. every day, and that my office has to be tidy, and that there can't be any distractions, or I can't write. I need to be able to adapt and be able to mm-hmm. write in other places, in other ways, and at other times.
Right. And I think that's the key for me is that, like, I know this about me. So what do I do? So I need to find different ways to write. And I've mentioned before that switching over to paper and pen works for me a lot. Why haven't I not done this for this project? I don't know, but I should, because I don't know if it's a right brain, left brain thing or whatever, but I feel like when you are physically moving the pen on paper, that sometimes it uses a different part of your brain. I have no science. I'm just telling you, this is my experience, that sometimes will unlock a writer's block or will open up new things. Plus, like, if I do that, I'm more portable. So I can do it. I can write in other places, like the doctor's office, or like I used to, when I was waiting in line, our cars to pick up my kids from school, I would do writing then while I waited. I've talked about trying dictation. It's, again, that's a whole process that I need to really dedicate myself to trying. But I think that if I could master dictation, I think I could get a lot more done and not have to be tied to my laptop, which sometimes I feel like is a hindrance for me at times.
Isn't that a form of perfection that you think it has to be done a certain way? So like so maybe you could use pen and paper but not use it for the writing.
What do you mean?
I don't know, I'm not very good at this. I've been, you know, those cards on Scrivener where you can go to the card section,
note cards.
Instead of doing it in Scrivener, I've been doing on actual note cards and writing it in pencil
You're outlining and you're planning is what you mean you could do.
Yeah, I'm mm-hmm. writing my ideas of what I think I want to put in each section, like each act of the book. Mm-hmm. And it's not like every scene. It's more like the tropes that need to be in that act, like offering plausible suspects. Why can't I say that? present the crime, introduce complications, develop the subplot. So like I just, every time I have an idea, no matter where I am, I just write it on the card enough mm-hmm. so that I'll remind myself what I thought about. So I've had like ideas in the back mm-hmm. in like act three of how I think it should end up at the end. And I've written those on these cards. And in the process of writing them out, I found my brain was like tweaking it even more, even though I had thought about it. Mm-hmm. Once I sat down to write it, my brain was like, well, what about this? And it was really helpful. So like you could write the book itself on pen and paper, but maybe you could just do the planning on pen and paper.
Right.
Or you could do journaling about what you want to write that day.
Same thing. When I write with pen and paper, when I go to put it into the computer, it often changes or gets better, or I do some kind of edits then. So same thing of what you're doing, but mine is like, because I do my planning pen and paper on Post-its. And so that I already do. So, yeah. All right. So here's another thing we talked about. You don't have to see one project through completion before you start the next. Now, this is something that I struggle with because I feel like I have to put, you know, the end and be done with this project before I can fully move on to the other one. Even though like I'm sprinting over multiple projects, I'm not working on multiple projects. Mm-hmm. So what would that look like, Tina? If I was like, if I'm in perfection about that, like how would I do that?
I actually just did this for myself.
Okay.
I decided I'm going to write in two completely different genres, two different series. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to continue to write in the Angelica story.
Okay.
I'm switching characters. So I'm taking some of the characters that were side characters in book three, but kind of ended up like main characters in the story.
Right.
And I'm going to write their story next. And it's going to be like a book four kind of situation. But book three is in editing. And what I've done is I put it aside for several weeks so that I can have some distance before I do my first read through, have it read to me, read it out loud, that overview of the book. And in the meantime, I'm writing a rough draft of book one of my murder mystery series, which is a completely different genre.
Right.
And I feel like because I'm high adaptability and I get bored easily, I think this is really going to help me because I'm not going to, like, the one of the problem with the Angelica series is I got bored.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if I'm going back and forth, I already feel it. I already feel ideas for that book four, like floating to the surface in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
While I'm working on a completely different genre.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And so I have this whole game board, and I'm going to post a picture. I don't know if I posted it in our Facebook group, but I'll post another one. And I did this whole domino thing where finishing the rough draft of the book three knocked over the domino of starting the rough draft of book one of Detective Reed. It also starts the process of the editing stages. And then once I send it to the editor, it's going to start this line of doing the black matter and the blurb and the cover, and then it's all going to come down to fruition in the publishing. And then the same thing with book one of the murder mystery, like that same process is going to go through, and the finishing the rough draft of book one is going to knock over the domino of starting the rough draft of book four from the Angelica series. So I'm always going to, so I'm going to have to split my time when that my 8 to 12 Monday through Thursday into writing and editing. So I'm getting my word count, then I will stop and I will go do the whatever I'm doing with the editing.
Right.
And so I'm going to have two things going simultaneously, and I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah. So I think it's important that you like look at the different stages of your writing, right? Like what you're saying makes a ton of sense. So like you have idea and outlining could be one thing you're working on with one novel. At the same time, you could be doing the actual writing in a different novel. Editing and revision. That's a whole nother thing you could be like doing in something else. You have your formatting and back matter, and then you have launch. So you could be launching a book while you're over here already working on other things. And so if you know what your different levels are, you can split your books up into those areas. And when you're working on this book in editing and revision, you make sure you're not editing and revising another book. You're over in a different part. Like you're either doing the idea and outlining, or you're doing launch, or so that like it's
and
still
the part
feels
of that
separate.
That's so appealing to me is the part that's fun. The part that I really enjoy is the creation. And editing is a little more painful.
Yes. Agreed.
And so being able to switch to not have to spend all my time, like if I don't have to wake up in the morning and go, oh, 4 hours of editing. No, I get to write, I get to create, I get to do that, and I also get to edit. And it might turn out that I have to do the editing first to earn the writing. We'll see what happens. It's a fluid thing, but that's my plan going forward. And I think it's a good idea.
I do too. I think it's great. Teresa says, I can rough draft all day, but I don't know how many edits I'll have to go through before I'm ready to let go and put it in someone else's hands. That flows us right into our next idea of that when you know it's done, know when it's done, and don't keep trying to make it perfect. We've all been there, over editing, not. Part of it, I think, is also like not feeling as if like you're good enough or it's good enough, or like a lot of it's imposter syndrome, but you get to a point where it just has to be done. Now we have other episodes that we've had about editing process. You can go back and search that in YouTube or I think any of the podcast providers would show that. Yeah, but we've had it about editing process and the process I go through. You don't have to do it exactly like me, but you probably should establish what your editing process is to begin with. Like for me, it's like when I finish the book, I put it away for at least 30 days. And then I bring it out and I read through it I go through one pass. And then after that, I have it read aloud to me by the computer. And then I read it aloud. Like I have a whole process and we talk about it at length. Tina has a different process, but whatever process you land on, I would even write it down And so check it off as you go through. And then once you get to the end of it, you're done. Like, it's done. Mm-hmm. So that's how you know when you're done. So, cause like, honestly, especially like with rough drafts, get it done. Just be done with it. Like, cause sometimes that's what that holds us up with our books, is that we don't get through the rough draft.
I'd like to tell you a story that Terry Schott told me. And Terry Schott is a strengths coach for Strengths for Writers. Mm-hmm. And he's who I coach with on my micro coachings. And he told this story about how he would always go through and do two run-throughs, editing passes of his books. And then he would send it to his alpha readers. And one time he sent it after only one pass. And his alpha reader contacted him and said, did you do two passes on this? And he said, no, I only did one. I haven't done the second pass yet. And she goes, it doesn't need it.
So that's him. And it may not be your story, but it could be. Yeah. You could be over editing.
This is the value of somebody that you really, really trust to tell you the truth and be honest. And having them as an alpha reader, like, take that rough draft that you've polished up one time or two times, whatever you're comfortable with, and send it to them and have them read it as a reader. I use my daughter because she knows nothing about spelling or grammar. Like, she needs spell check or she would just die, right? Like, she's just a reader. She reads hundreds of books a year and she knows story. And so what I want her to do is evaluate my story, not my spelling and my grammar and my sentence structure. Right. And so she knows nothing about all that. She's the perfect person for me to send my story to. And she will, I know she'll be honest with me.
And here's one of the most magic things about being an indie author is that even after you hit publish, you can still edit your book. Yeah. You can go back in and fix it. So if after you hit publish, you find more mistakes or you get reviews that say it's not edited well enough, you can go back and fix it. So sometimes you just need to let go of the perfectionism and just be done, right? Because remember, we can't be perfect on our own, right? So why do we expect perfection from our writing, right? Like, we talked about this on a spiritual level too, Tina and I did, that like, we don't expect ourselves to reach perfection without the help of Jesus Christ.
Right.
But yet somehow we think that we can produce perfection somehow on our own. Right. And so I think that like we're putting ourselves in a ridiculous position that we think we can put out the perfect novel when we have in our own personal lives cannot do anything to perfection. It's only by the grace and love of Jesus Christ.
The only being in the universe who has ever created something perfect is God.
That's very true. Very true. All right. And Purpose Behind the Pen agrees with us about the editing. She says, I stay editing my books after publishing. This is why I never throw away my manuscripts. Yeah, everything I have still on my computer. Everything. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, awesome. Now it's time for our favorite part of the episode. It's time for the feeding of the backs. Just like we start. Oh, sorry. Wrong thing. It's feedback time. It's here that we share our writings that we just did raw. So before the episode starts, if you're new to our podcast, we put out a prompt and the hosts on the show, we write to that prompt in a 15-minute time frame and then we don't edit it. And then we come on the show and we share it live. So we only give positive and encouraging feedback. This is not like a normal critique session where you would bring something that was edited. So Tina, what was our prompt and what did you write?
The prompt was, he kept me from making a big mistake. And it was a sentence in quotes. So you're supposed to use the sentence in the sprint. So I wrote in my murder mystery world because that's where my brain is right now.
Okay.
Turned out Jenny lived in the same park as the victim, only several streets over. Detective Reed parked in front of the mint green trailer and headed toward the door. A fairly new wooden fence rimmed the yard. The smell of it felt tingling in his nose when contrasted with the wet dirt smell that seemed to permeate the air this time of year. The yard was tidier than most. A plastic big wheel lined up behind the porch with two girls' bikes, one with training wheels, and a 10-speed. The wooden porch was also new, and as he stepped on the bottom step, the door opened, and a girl, a appearing to be about mid-20s, stepped out with a cigarette in one hand and a phone in the other. "Detective Robert Reed," he said, flipping open his wallet to show his badge. "You're here about Claire." "Yes, ma'am. I was wondering if I could ask you a few questions." "Kids are napping." "Kids are napping, or at least they're supposed to be. Can we talk out here?" "Of course." Jenny closed the door gently behind her and tiptoed down the steps, then led Detective Reed back through the gate and out onto the sidewalk. "Those walls are paper thin," she said, "if we could still keep our voices down." Detective Reed nodded, noticing her red-rimmed eyes and blotchy cheeks. "How well did you know Claire Mahoney?" "Well, we worked together at the Pancake House. That's where I met her. Gave her a ride home a few times. We talked, you know, on breaks and between customers. We weren't BFFs or anything. We never hung out, but I feel like I knew her pretty well." "What about the husband, Danny Mahoney, or the kids, Scotty and Liza?" "Never met them. Saw him standing in the doorway once when I drove her home. Everything I know is from what she told me." "What did she tell you about Danny in particular?" "Well, she said he once kept her from making a big mistake, but that hadn't mattered. Things went bad anyway. 3, 2, 1.
So good. Okay, so I want to point out to the listeners that you wrote just dialogue with no tags or anything. But yeah,
I might have had one or two, but yeah.
Yeah, but it still made complete sense. Like, you can already feel. So yeah, you gave description at the beginning, but then when you got to dialogue, there was like just dialogue. So I love that. So here's something that is interesting to me about Jenny, which I hope is J-E-N-I, just saying, just throwing that out there.
I could change it.
I'm just kidding. Is that with Jenny, is that we know something about her already without knowing anything. Like the fact that her yard is a little bit neater. We know how many kids she has. That says a whole lot about her right there. We know how many kids she has, and we know that for some reason in this trailer park, hers is neater. And that tells us something about her, though we don't know exactly what, so we want to know more, right? So I love those little bits of information in writing without saying, like, the obvious. Instead of telling us, like, she was, you know, she clearly was neater or whatever. So, yeah, well done. I love that.
Thanks.
Yeah. Purpose behind the pen. I can't get my mouse to work. Purpose behind the pen says, "Wow, the suspense and dialogue are intriguing. Love it." Yeah, I'm excited for this book.
So, I am too, especially since I changed it. I think it's going to be much better.
I agree. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And you're writing in this while editing the other. So this is like your sprints, unlike my sprints that are all over the place right now. Your sprints are actually fitting into the story and like we're going to be getting a finished story. Me, who knows what you're going to get. So
someday it'll be a finished story. I'm very confident of that.
Yes, I'm excited. Yeah, good for you, Tina. All right, so I tried writing in the Old West, and I just couldn't get anything started. This prompt did not speak Old West to me. So we're back in Mr. Boss's world.
Yay! So.
If your father owns the company, how come you are only just now joining the firm? That's a terrible sentence. I'm sorry, everybody, that you had to listen to that.
Hey, this is what we're trying to show you through our sprints is that it doesn't have to be perfect.
Oh, no, it sure doesn't.
It has to be finished.
Stay tuned. It sure doesn't. Mr. Boss hitched his right shoulder and simultaneously, as if being pulled by the same string, the right corner of his mouth twitched in unison. It gave him the most adorably boyish look, and Marnie instantly imagined him as an 8-year-old boy being asked why he didn't turn in his homework. It was endearing. It was endearing if Marnie had been susceptible to that type of cuteness, which she most definitely was not, especially not from this man. "You know how it is," he began, "a 22-year-old know-it-all graduating from Harvard who thinks he must prove himself to the world and thinks he can't establish himself if it's handed to him by his already successful father." No, Marnie didn't know how it was. She was a scholarship kid who came from a family of blue-collar workers who labored every day of their lives just to make ends meet. She also graduated from Boston University. She never would have been so lame as to graduate from that lame college across the Charles River. "Then how did you end up here?" He did the shrug thing again. "Really? Could he please stop being so adorable? It was getting pretty annoying. Let's just say my dad is a much wiser man than me. He kept me from making a big mistake. Marnie wanted to know more, though she wasn't certain why, since it was absolutely none of her business. But she didn't have a chance to ask more questions because it was at just that moment that 3, 2, 1.
Oh, no.
I wrote slow today.
So. You know what I loved about that?
What?
She says that all those things had no effect on her, yet she noticed every one of them.
Exactly. Exactly.
She's a big liar.
She's only lying to herself, though, right?
So, and us.
Yeah, and us.
But we're not fooled, Marnie. I always love when you write in this world, because I love the snark. I'm like a big fan of snarks.
Me too.
I love the snark of Marnie, and it's so much fun.
Yeah. I think that maybe, like, if I start your process of doing two different projects at the same time, I can go back and forth between a historical and a contemporary, because I do really enjoy writing the contemporary. I think you could probably put snark in historical. I just can't seem to do it. It just doesn't fit with my writing, but it sure fits with my contemporary writing. So, and I enjoy that.
When I think about snark in Western, like, kind of settings, I think of that guy with the donkey and the, like, not, it's not like from Beverly Hills. What is that show where they find a whale in Texas and they go to Beverly Hills?
Oh, the Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah. Not that guy. There's like a guy that's in actual Westerns and he wears like this floppy hat, cowboy hat, and he has a donkey.
I know exactly who you're talking about. Yeah.
Like, that's who I picture when I think of snark in Westerns. And that's the only thing I can picture.
I think I have a little bit of snark in mind. There are a few laugh out loud moments, but not as many as I could put into the Marnie story. Or I've got a couple other contemporaries that are like in the works as well that I don't think I've shared on here. Maybe I have some bits of them, but yeah, I'm definitely much snarkier and hopefully laugh out loud in my contemporaries. So. And it was fun for me to put the Harvard Boston University. I didn't know he came from Harvard, but it totally fits because I went to BU and BU and Harvard. So there's football rivalry between BU, Harvard, BC, and Northeastern. But for sure, the Harvard people always crack the joke that if you go to BU, you want to get a real education. You want to go to Harvard if you want to feed your ego, kind of a thing. But I don't know. Anywho, I'm going to probably unload that a little bit. I struggled. Let me give you guys a little bit of insight into the writing of this too, is that paragraph I struggled in because I was going to have her say part of it out loud. And then I wasn't, I originally was going to have it written just like I wrote it. And then I'm like, no, I want him to hear her slam Harvard. So I started going back in and trying to fix that, and it just wasn't working. And so I went back and did it the way I did. And so, so even though it was a sprint, I still did some editing. I know I'm not supposed to, but I did because I wanted it to feel good and feel right to me. Mm-hmm. And so eventually she will.
Fine.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
Remind me to pick your brain later about what you might know about Boston crime families.
I know nothing except, I have a story though, real quick. So I had to take, I thought I wanted to be a lawyer for like a hot minute. And so when I was an undergrad, I took a communication law class because Boston University has a really great law school. And so they have undergrad classes for kids that are considering going in that direction and you can start taking. So I took it, hated it. It was the worst class I took the whole 4 years I was in school. I hated it. But part of the assessment was we had to go to court and sit and listen to court cases and take notes. And then we had to come back and we had to write this like kind of paper based on the different things. I don't remember the paper at all. I don't remember what I was supposed to be doing, but I remember sitting in court and it was like things that surprised me was the room was much smaller than I expected. On TV, the courts are always huge and there's always a bunch of people, right? Mm-hmm. So I go in, like you go and you check in and then they tell you the rooms you can go to because not all of them are open. So I went in and there's only like two other people sitting in the audience besides me. And then I couldn't hear anything that was happening. That was the other thing I wrote notes about. It's like, you know, it's way up front. Well, anyways, it's time for a break and the defendant comes back and starts talking to me. And he was probably in his 50s, 40s maybe. And he starts kind of flirting with me. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And I'm trying to pick up. I was supposed to stay all afternoon for the whole court case. But he's like, what are you doing for lunch? And he's like, what do you think of the case? I'm like, I really can't hear it. He's like, oh, do you know what's going on? I'm like, no. And I said, what's going on? He's like, no. He's like, extortion. He was a defendant. He was like all proud of himself that he was on trial for extortion. And he thinks I'm some sort of hot toddy that's going to go out with him, because he had a very expensive suit on. It was super obvious that he had money, jewelry on. And I was just like, oh. And so as soon as the case started back up again, I slipped out. You weren't supposed to. Like, I left. I'm like, I got on the T.
He probably thought you were a reporter and you're going to write a good story about him.
I don't know what he thought.
Right.
Yes. Like, yep. I died. I was a nervous wreck till I got home. He didn't have my name or anything, but I was like, and this is before the internet. And even, oh my gosh. So yeah, that's my only run-in with Boston crime, but okay. It exists because I met one.
I've been doing a lot of research in it.
Yeah.
So I probably know more than you do.
Maybe Jenny should be like a crime boss wife.
In the trailer park.
No, probably not.
Maybe not. But maybe the crime boss comes to her. Comes to her diner. In Anchorage. Oh. Yeah. Not likely.
Oh. Yeah, you never know. You never know. I don't think Otisville has any crime bosses, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, that's true.
Little towns.
My father-in-law used to joke about the reason he had the sunroof in his black Cadillac was because they got tired of shooting out the windows.
Nice.
He was Italian. The first time I met him, he was literally wearing a maroon crushed velvet robe, and he had a bottle of Chianti in his hand. You know, the jugs with the little ring at the neck?
Yeah.
And it was sitting on his knee, and he was watching TV in a recliner.
Wow.
Like, I was like, you're going to tell me your dad was the godfather?
That's awesome. All right. So how we start every episode with our what's up, we're going to end it with our what's next. This is a chance for us to talk about our future plans for the coming week. So Tina, tell us what's next for you.
Well, I'm going to continue with my plan. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. There was something I wanted to tell all you guys and it's gone.
It's you just want me to do my what's next first?
Yeah.
Okay, so my what's next is I am going to write the note from Jen. That's my goal this week. I'm going to get it done. Whether I have to write it on pen and paper, whether I have to like dictate it, whatever. Maybe I'll do several versions. That might help me if every day I write a different one and take the best of them. I think that's actually a really good idea. So I'm going to get it done. I'm going to get all the back matter done because I can't even design the book cover until I know how thick the book is. So
yeah.
That's where I'm at. So doing that this week, that's my goal. All right. Did you remember Tina?
No, I did not.
Okay. So,
I guess it's not important because I can't remember it, but yeah, I'm just going to like, this is what I wanted to tell you. I set up my gamified my thing. And I think I showed you guys this last week.
Yeah.
Where I have these like fake jewels and I can put jewels in there based on my work, how many words I wrote. And I actually got to put a $10,000 jewel, or $10,000. I wish. 10,000 word jewel in my vase.
That's awesome.
Which needs to be cleaned again because I keep touching it. But, I have a great big pink one in here, which is for a 10,000 word count. Mm-hmm. I've written 10,000 words since I had my micro coaching that Monday night, and he told me to read what I wrote the day before the last 5 pages every morning first thing.
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea. Teresa says her what's next is she changed her morning routine to make it easier for her to show up for herself and write at 8 every morning. Good for you, Teresa. That's awesome.
And I'd just like to tell everybody that the Zoom room is available to anyone who is in our Facebook private group, the listeners of the Christianity Writers podcast. And since I am trying to stay off of social media till I am done writing, I am just going to go into the Zoom room at 8 a.m. every morning and be there till noon, Monday through Thursday. So I'm not going to be announcing it. So I just want everyone to know that so that they're not like, well, she didn't start it this morning. No, I'm in there. I'm just not going on social media because it distracts me.
All right. Sounds like a great plan. I hope you guys all have a great plan for this coming week. But until next week, may your pen be prolific, may your deadlines be met, and may all of your words honor Christ. Bye now.